Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Now it's time to talk. This is Election Night in Late Night with Jarrett Hill. Here is your host, Jarrett Hill.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Election Night in Late Night. I'm your host, Jarrett Hill, and really excited to talk about New Hampshire tonight and all of the crazy election results. I have to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised again. Not quite as surprised as I was with Iowa, but surprised nonetheless. I want to welcome in all of my guests. Joining me here in studio, we have Rance Collins from Bros for America. Welcome.
Hello, thank you.
We have Asha Daya, the founder of Girl Talk HQ and the author of today's Wonder Women. Welcome.
Hello.
And we have Ryan Mitchell joining us from Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan.
Hi.
Right here on the new Channel Q.
Hello, hello.
I must say it has been an interesting night looking at the results. Oh, yeah. As just in the last half hour or so, Bernie Sanders was officially declared the winner of New Hampshire. Interestingly enough, in the delegate count and the way that we end up choosing a nominee, Bernie and Pete will both be getting the same number of delegates, which is also interesting, which pits Pete Buttigieg just a little bit ahead of Bernie Sanders. Top line feelings, you all. What do you make of what happened tonight for Bernie Sanders, for Pete Buttigieg, but also for Amy Klobuchar, who came in third place, has more votes than Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden combined?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
That's the surprising. I love that, this last minute surge from her. I think she's got like this debate momentum going on. I think people are excited by her.
Yeah.
I feel like we're seeing more from her in these last few days than we've seen in the last few months, which is, I guess, good. I don't know what it's going to mean for her in the next few states, but it's interesting to see her coming out and, you know, going big. Let's see what happens next with her.
Yeah, honestly, I think she's a prime example of kind of like the metaphor about kind of the tortoise and the hare, where it's like you think it's a fast, it's like a fast race, but maybe she's kind of the underdog.
The long game.
And I think it's interesting, and it kind of makes me, even though I feel like she is so boring, and like watching paint dry. I said it earlier, and I'm going to continue to say it, but with these results tonight, it's actually making me interested in understanding what she has to say.
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe, is this a voice that I'm missing? I don't know.
Well, so that's what's interesting about primaries, right? Is when you have them in this order, people start to pay attention to candidates because they've done well, right? There are undoubtedly people who voted for Pete Buttigieg tonight because they were like, huh, he did pretty well in Iowa.
Yeah.
Maybe
so
maybe he's a real contender. There are undoubtedly people who looked at Amy Klobuchar after the debate and said,
she's got something.
I like her. Because they say so many of these voters make the decision in the last couple of days. This morning they were on MSNBC in a bar, like they love to be in these kinds of situations.
Right.
In a bar.
Where are the everyday voters hanging out? There they are at the local pub.
They were there with all of these people who they were asking, like, who have you decided to vote for? And so many of them, one, said that they made the decision in the last couple of days, and each of the people they talked to this morning were saying, Amy Klobuchar because of either her debate performance or having seen her, you know, at
or they're her cousin.
Or
I honestly feel like her family is there and everyone just looks like her. They're all clones of Amy Klobuchar, so that's the only reason why they're hopping on this train.
And Amy Klobuchar?
Yes. That is exactly how I feel. It's basically like they're Elon Musk, which means they're like aliens returning back to their home planet, and the home planet is Amy.
Wow.
I mean, if that can win us the election in November, right. That's fine.
We'll
let's keep
off.
Cloning her.
We need better Bernie bros. Like, we need better than that.
So that actually kind of brings me to one of the things that's a real concern to me is the Bernie bro,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
We saw that polling that said, you know, 50%+ of Bernie supporters won't vote for someone else if Bernie's not the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie winning tonight obviously emboldens the Bernie bro, right? And if Bernie does not end up being the candidate,
it's going to be vicious.
It's a real concern.
It does embolden the Bernie bro, but I will also contend here that this was a state he was projected to win by about 8 points. And he won the state with over 60% of the vote in 2016. And yes, there were only two candidates at that time, sure. But the theory, I think, would be that when you won so decidedly and you're in the state right next door to where you live,
yes.
With demographics that are very similar to your home state, you're basically on your home turf and you should do really well. So the fact that he's winning this state with less than 2% lead is a huge story. And I would say he should be thankful for Amy Klobuchar's performance in the debate on Friday, because I think Amy Klobuchar probably took away some of Pete Buttigieg's votes. Mm. And if she hadn't done that, he might not be up there declaring victory today.
That is a very interesting perspective.
We're saying that, you know, considering people talking about the revolution and this momentum he's got, why hasn't he been turning out bigger
where are the voters?
You know, in Iowa, he got a lot of young people.
But I think that's what we were talking off air about, like this kind of underlying concern that Democrats are not feeling motivated to come out in moments like this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like we're getting that. I mean, not yet, but right now is kind of what we need to see if what's going to count. And I think this is what's important. And I always think about that connection of like, what are we going to see actually, you know, on voting day or even a Super Tuesday when
which is around the corner.
Exactly. When we're not thinking that Democrats are even motivated by any of the current contenders.
What you're saying here is actually something that I've probably said this on the show on Monday, but it's something that continues to sit with me. And I want to bring in Deborah Cleaver, the founder of Vote.org, to be a part of this conversation, because I am still really unclear on how I feel about turnout. Turnout right now, even though it's a little bit low when we're considering how many people have been showing up in the primary and in the caucus, I'm concerned that it's one of two things. Number one, it's either that people are saying, I don't care what Democrat it is, as long as it's someone that beats Donald Trump. That's on one extreme.
Except if you're a Bernie bro and you vote for Trump.
Sure. That's on one extreme. The other extreme is people are not fired up about this. And people maybe are not going to be like as anti-Trump voters as we thought they might be. Deborah, I'm curious what turnout and the whole get out the vote of the election right now, what that's doing for you. What is that saying to you?
So I'm actually looking at the numbers, and with 85% of precincts reporting, it looks like turnout's as high this year as it was in 2016. So actually, it doesn't look low. And with this many people running, I kind of expected it to be lower. It's just less exciting. It looks like there's 50 people running. I know it's actually
it really does.
I know it's only about 7, but so far it does not look like turnout is low to me.
Well, I mean, but all the conversation was that there would probably be historic numbers in some of these states, and like we haven't seen that yet. Mind you, we're 2 states in, but that's not alarming or concerning to you.
No, I think we see the historic number in the November election. I'm not sure which one of you said this. I think it's possible that people are like, I don't care. Like, vote blue no matter who.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, if the average Democratic voter feels super passionately. I know that some Democratic voters do. You know, the Bernie bros stand out. But at least in my friend circle, a lot of people are just like, I do not care, and I refuse to get this worked up in February.
One of the other things that was interesting to me that I saw being pointed out on MSNBC a little bit earlier today was the numbers on the Republican side. Like, we're all focused on the Democratic primary because there's so many different candidates, and we have an incumbent president who's running for re-election. But there's an interesting set of numbers in the Republican primary because technically Donald Trump has to run and get his delegates, right? What's interesting to me there, Bill Weld is the Republican that's running against Donald Trump. He brought in 9.2% of the vote so far with 85% of precincts reporting, which means he has almost 13,000 votes. It's interesting to me that 1 in 10 almost Republicans went out to the polls and voted against Donald Trump, knowing that their candidate wouldn't win, right? Knowing that Bill Weld was not going to get this nomination.
That is interesting.
It's interesting to me that 1 in 10 people went and voted for Donald Trump. But also, if you look at the 2016 numbers from the November election, Donald Trump lost New Hampshire by just 3,000 or so votes. When you look at that perspective, Deborah, I'm
curious. He also lost Iowa.
Looking specifically at
I was thinking about the primary. Never mind.
Yeah. But like, I'm curious when you see something like that with Republicans coming out to vote against Donald Trump today. What does that say to you?
I mean, honestly, it says there's a good chance that they won't vote in the November election. You know, there's two ways for a Democrat. to win, increase Democratic turnout, or just have Republicans stay home. And by the way, thank you for pointing that out. I was so busy looking at the Democrats that I actually didn't notice that, 1 in 10 Republicans felt the need to come out to vote against Trump. Like, that says something.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just hate the idea of thinking that those people won't come out if, like, you know, they're Republicans that out. And I think that's the same concern that we're seeing with the Bernie bros, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if they just full on just, you know, Bernie doesn't become the primary candidate, they're just over and done with. I just think that scares me on both sides that we're both politically seeing at both of these parties are there's people feeling the same way. Like, I don't want to vote for Trump, and I also don't want to vote for whoever is the dip. So it's just like, how do we navigate those conversations? And Deborah, I would love to know with like vote.org, like, how are you navigating those conversations that actually encourage people to come out and actually get involved on a level before the actual important day?
Yeah, I know, Deborah, you're not at vote.org anymore, but that you have. Yep. But I'm more so when we're looking at Get Out the Vote and that, can you speak to that perspective?
I mean, it's really interesting. It's like on the one hand, for us political people, like right now is just so exciting. But and keep in mind, I'm an optimist. Always been an optimist about this stuff. It's like there's 266 days until the election, so I think a lot of people really aren't paying attention right now. The other thing is, like, it's only February and things have been so wild that I honestly and truly cannot predict how many scandals there are going to be between today
and
the November.
I mean,
anything could happen.
I'm going to be in like six.
Anything could happen.
All right, well, that's what I continually think about Pete Buttigieg. And I said this on Monday, and you guys disagreed with me. But if Pete Buttigieg becomes the candidate, the day after, there's going to be some sex scandal. I don't know what the scandals are about Bernie Sanders, right?
You know, they've never actually fully gone after Bernie Sanders. And you better believe that they are going to hammer him on the socialist stuff. Mm-hmm. They're already doing it.
Yeah.
They're already doing it, but they're going to go hard on him. But they've never really fully gone after
him. And the Republicans have never gone after him.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. They've got the Oppo research and they're waiting for it. So that's what I'm worried about. I just hope that, you know, when you were talking about the Bernie bros earlier, that there are a lot of women of color within his coalition. And I hope that they would, you know, like, talk some sense into the Bernie bros. Like, come on, we can't just lose it.
But Bernie, first of all, Bernie bros are as misogynistic and probably low-key racist undertones. They're not listening to black women. They're not listening to really any women to tell them anything, specifically black women. And specifically, probably, I don't think Bernie is working with any trans black women, but even if when it comes to Elizabeth Warren, she is.
Yes, that is true.
It's one of those things that I don't
And she listens to
listen.
Yeah. They listen. And so my thing is, I just don't think Bernie bros are connecting with anything other than what is Bernie. Bernie and maybe what Bernie is kind of representing, which is also something that I don't feel like people are really thinking of, because it's not like, I'm not saying he co-signs them, but he's also not really stopping them.
He doesn't stop. He doesn't stop
them. Am I the only one that's surprised by how much of a gulf there is between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders when we're looking at these election results?
Misogyny.
It's misogyny. Do you remember in 2016 whenever they would always say, I would vote for a woman, just not that woman? Who is the woman they would say they would vote for? Elizabeth Warren. Well, now's your chance to. And they completely ignore her.
Yeah. And she is at 9%
if they don't go after her.
So sad.
Yeah.
9%. Okay.
Misogyny.
I keep wondering if it's misogyny. Like, I mean, obviously misogyny is always going to play a role in this, in an election. But I'm wondering, like, what is it about Bernie Sanders that is so distinctly different that we see this huge gulf of, you know, 15 points between the two of them? Because
it's a cult of personality.
I think you're right. That's why the Bernie bros would be like, well, I'm not going to vote for the other Democratic establishment nominee. I'm going to go to Trump. It's just like, if that's your logical conclusion going from Bernie to Trump, then I hesitate to call you a progressive in the first place. But
you're not a progressive in the first place. You just care about your privilege at that point, and you just care about the cult of personality.
Exactly.
And well, here's the thing. We got to take a quick break. But when we come back, there's been some interesting developments in the polling around voters around the country. One candidate decided to not even show up in New Hampshire this evening. A whole lot more coming up. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Election Night in Late Night with Jared Hill.
Election Night in Late Night with Jared Hill.
Welcome back to Election Night in Late Night with Jared Hill. That's me. I'm Jared Hill, and this is Election Night in Late Night. Want to welcome back all of my guests. Rance Collins joining us from Bros for America.
Hi.
And Asha Daya, author of... I love your dance that you're doing to the music. She is from Girl Talk HQ and the writer of today's Wonder Women.
Hello.
And joining us from Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan is Ryan Mitchell.
You forgot to add your favorite afternoon show, Let's Go There with Ryan Mitchell.
Well, thanks. I'm a journalist and I don't like to lie on the air. And then joining us on the phone from the Bay Area is the founder of Vote.org. Her name is Deborah Cleaver. Hey, Deborah.
Hey.
All right. So I wanted to talk with you all because about something that is interesting to me. We have not even talked about Joe Biden tonight.
Thank God.
We are.
I don't think the voters even
my millennial.
Exactly right.
My millennial black soul doesn't want
we
that.
We are 20 minutes into the hour. We've not talked about Joe Biden, and neither has New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Right. So Joe Biden came in what is looking like a fourth place position tonight in New Hampshire, meaning he won't be going home with any of the delegates. I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. No, you had to hit 15%.
Yeah. He's in fifth place. So
yes, that's exciting.
It's Bernie Sanders is in first, Pete Buttigieg is in second, Amy Klobuchar in third, Elizabeth Warren in fourth, also not getting any delegates, mm-hmm. but Joe Biden is in fifth place. Joe Biden decided to not even stay in New Hampshire tonight. He skipped Nevada and is in South Carolina tonight, which he believes, you know, is going to be his stronghold.
Like most mm-hmm. people think, black people will always be your stronghold.
Well, yeah. But that is what is interesting about this, right? So a Quinnipiac poll came out either yesterday or the day before, showing that Joe Biden's support in the black community with black voters has dropped by 22 votes.
Ooh.
22 points.
22 votes.
22 votes.
That's a lot.
Oh, no.
So it's dropped by 22 points since the end of January. And he's gone down to 27%. What's interesting is Mike Bloomberg has seen a rise 15 points. He's got a 22% support. But then Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg have all seen like small growth with black voters. So this is really going to seemingly be Joe Biden's last stand, right?
Yeah.
If Joe Biden does not come in first place in South Carolina, is that a wrap for him?
I think it's not just first place. It's like he needs to win with a considerable margin for people to be like, okay, he's still in the race.
But yeah,
no.
I think it's time that he just wraps it up.
It's just so interesting to me. How is Bloomberg getting that level of support?
I think, have you seen the new ad with Obama? Where Obama's kind of it's an old speech that Bloomberg is using for, like, he's like pulling it out of his back pocket, like, oh, Obama has co-signed me. There's an ad running currently that I've been seeing a lot more.
Yeah.
And I do think there's something to be said about kind of the shift that's happening from people and just black people in general feeling like, oh, Joe Biden's in our corner. He had Obama, but Obama really hasn't said anything about anyone.
Right.
And then you see an ad that comes up, you know, with Michael Bloomberg spending all of his money to make sure you see it like 12 times a day.
Yeah.
that Obama's co-signing this guy. I think that also still has a lot of power in our community. And I thought about that, and I was like, wow, there's probably a connection there. But I also think Joe Biden's doing a terrible job.
He is.
If nothing else, is like the effectiveness of spending is always really hard to correlate. But Mike Bloomberg is on the air in all of these states, and seemingly that's got to be helping him. But Joe Biden does such a terrible job in these debates. I was saying to all of you while we were in commercial,
is he new to this?
If Joe Biden, well, this is his third time running for president.
He's not doing many events. He's not getting himself out there.
Even beyond that, like the idea that Joe Biden cannot compete against Democrats in a debate makes me really concerned about him going up against Donald Trump. I don't see how that is going to turn any differently.
Well, one thing I want to say about Mike Bloomberg, you can pay your way to get into the race, which is obscene in itself and whatever. But one thing you can't pay your way out of is your own history when it comes to policies like Stop and
Frisk. Could you hit that bell for me?
I think that is a...
I think
you make a really good point. So for those of you that aren't aware, today there was a video that, a piece of audio that resurfaced on a podcast where they were talking about Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg in, was it 2015 or 2016?
2015.
Was talking about Stop and Frisk. If you're not familiar with Stop and Frisk, it is a policy that was in New York City that allowed police officers to basically stop whoever they wanted to whenever they felt like it.
Brown people.
Exactly. Basically, right?
And black ones.
Stop them and that's frisk them and see what if they had something on them. The statistics that came out about Stop and Frisk basically showed that, you know, an overwhelming number of the people that were being stopped and frisked were black and brown. And Mike Bloomberg came out and apologized for this right before he
inherited this policy right before he started running
for office. And I will say that this audio is a little bit difficult, so you got to really turn up your radio and pay attention. But this is him talking about how Stop and Frisk really was not a big deal and it was not so bad. Take a listen.
Because we put all the cops in the minority neighborhoods. Yes, that's true. Why do we do it? Because that's where all the crime is. And the way you get the guns out of the kids' hands is to throw them against the wall and frisk them. And then they start...
So the audio goes on and he is talking about how you can basically, you know, take the description of one suspect, Xerox copy it and send it over to, you know, every different police officer, basically talking about black and brown people. Right. Mm-hmm. He talks about how you need to make sure to put all the cops in the black and brown neighborhoods because that's where the crime is. There seems like there's no remorse. Right. For the ways that Stop and Frisk really negatively impact black and brown people in New York City. I must say that this number that Mike Bloomberg shows having 22% support amongst black voters, I cannot imagine that holds after something like this.
They haven't listened to it yet, and they haven't, like...
Well, right. This poll was done before this happened.
Right, yeah. I do think everything about Michael Bloomberg has been strategic. And from the moment where he apologizes for this, he also apologizes for his trans, you know, anti-trans comments and anti-gay comments, all these things. I just feel like he is a proven effect of showing that, yes, he's another white man that's entering into this. He has a ton of money. He's going to do whatever he wants. And I think that's what this shows. And everything that he tries to combat these past remarks feels just strategic at this point. It won't feel like it's genuine. And I think there's just no way. I wasn't with him before. I had a problem with the way that he's handled this election. And I also just wouldn't give him my support regardless, especially with everyone talking about what was going on in New York with Stop and Frisk.
Deborah,
and like, does he think people are stupid?
Deborah, I'm curious about your perspective on this because Michael Bloomberg has obviously spent a ridiculous amount of money in, you know, 35 different states, I believe, to try and make a play there. How does the spending tend to impact people's perception of a candidate when we're looking at people getting out to vote?
Marketing is marketing. He's marketing himself. And right now, because he hasn't been on any debate stages and because no one's taking him seriously, he hasn't had to face the consequences of Stop and Frisk. But I wanted to speak to this because there's something that you would have no way of knowing about me, which is that I investigated police misconduct for the city of New York while Stop and Frisk was a policy.
I love a secret agent.
Even tell you, I mean, basically any time, a black or brown person filed a complaint about being stopped and frisked, we exonerated it. because that was the policy. And so I can tell you from someone who dealt with these complaints, I mean, these were people who were just being stopped because they fit a description of like a black man on the street. So the whole thing was crazy. Like, in retrospect, I'm like, oh my God, we would just take these complaints and basically close them, because stop and frisk gave the police the right to detain civilians for almost no reason. And the fact that in 2020, Bloomberg doesn't look back on this with the same horror I did is very telling. Like, you know, I was young, I was in my 20s, I just did what people told me to do, but he's a grown man. And he's still like, we did the right thing, even though it resulted in finding a gun. I think it was like 0.1%, and 90% of people would just let go. Like, they weren't even given a summons. I do not think Bloomberg will survive his very recent defense of stop and frisk.
How do you think that he is going to be able to respond to this? Because it's something that I don't see a way around for him. Because, again, like, we talked about the trans comment that he made that resurfaced from 2016. And I was like, this wasn't 1998.
No.
You know what I mean?
It was yesterday.
This was very recent.
It was yesterday.
Having worked in New York City, how do you see him trying to make his way out of this situation?
I mean, the same way he makes his way out of every situation is with money, but I don't think that, it's going to be challenging. Like, he's not charismatic in the way that Bernie is or Warren is. His policies are sometimes offensive to the people whose votes he needs. I think it will be really interesting if he actually gets onto a debate stage. I think it will be challenging for Bloomberg.
I almost wanted to get him.
He needs to be challenged.
Yeah. I was talking with a friend of mine tonight before getting on the air, and we were talking about how it's kind of crazy that Mike Bloomberg could have actually credibly run as a Republican as well, because he's all over the place on these different policies, which really makes me cringe thinking about how polar opposite our parties are right now, right? There's not a whole bunch of overlap on anything. And the idea that he sits so squarely in the middle and could have incredibly is running right now as a Democrat, but could have credibly run as a Republican, it makes me nervous, because it makes me not really clear on where he stands on anything.
Right. Yeah.
And he has a whole list of policy positions on his website.
But
also, he ran as a Republican in New York.
He ran
as a Republican specifically so that he wouldn't have to go through a primary.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, if there's one thing I would say about Bloomberg, is this is his tactic. Yeah. Like, he doesn't want to be involved in primaries. He doesn't want to answer questions. I mean, don't forget, at the end of the day, this man's a billionaire.
Yeah, girl, like, he'll be fine. He's white, too.
I think he heard about that.
What?
I just wanted to make
sure.
Oh
my God,
we all
knew. He's white.
Go ahead, Deborah.
He's rich and white.
I've always felt like, Bloomberg, a rich white man, is not particularly interested in answering questions about his behavior and past actions. And as you've pointed out, we're not talking about statements he made in the 60s.
Yeah. Mm.
Nope.
Yeah.
We're talking about things that he's probably said over the past few weeks.
Yeah, and I actually do think it's important to note here that I really think what we're seeing here is why, you know, we hear topics and we see results of the black vote is a very strong vote.
Yes.
And a very strong vote in for the Democrats. I mean, you see Joe Biden running away quick to South Carolina so he can get all the black votes he needs. You see, all these people talking about you're polling less than zero.
I think
this really shows, even kind of falls down to the caucuses and what we're seeing here in New Hampshire. Why are they the first two states? Mm-hmm. Why is it not reflective of what we really need? And obviously that's oftentimes the black vote to really win this thing.
I would say that it is the winner of the black vote that has decided who the nominee was for at least since Bill Clinton, if not farther back. So my question right now is, okay, with Biden seemingly flatlining and him having held that vote held that in poll numbers for so long now, where is that vote going to go? Who is that going to bolster?
I think that vote has been going to a combination of Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar.
Right.
Is it going to Pete Buttigieg, though?
I think Pete Buttigieg is enough of a moderate for people.
Isn't he on,
I mean, he doesn't seem to have that support.
You mean the black vote?
I'm talking about the black vote. Where is the black vote going to go? Because that's deciding the election right there. The only way that a person wins without you know, strong support from the Black community is in a situation that I'm afraid about, which is the situation that one Donald Trump, the Republican primary in 2016. You have an overcrowding of candidates and you win, you squeak by in the early contest at and Super Tuesday, winning pluralities and not majorities.
Yeah.
And you split things up so much that there's only one candidate left standing, and it's not necessarily the candidate anyone wanted. There's just too many other people to choose from.
Deborah, I'm curious about your perspective on, as again, we're talking about get out the vote, right, and how important it's going to be for people to turn out in this election. What do you imagine the strategies need to look like for getting voters out to the polls this year? Because we are kind of seeing it being flat from last election.
I mean, in general, I think you need to assume that people want to vote. The reason our turnout rates are so much lower than other countries with democratically elected leadership is it's just hard to vote. I also think this year, we're not to be dark, but we're going to see a lot of chaos this year and a lot of misinformation, disinformation. I think in states that, you know, we historically see voter suppression, things are going to be crazy. Polling places are going to be changed at the last minute. So I think it's going to be on all of us to like really make sure that, you know, vulnerable voters know when to vote, where to vote, and what to do if they get there. But we've like totally, we were just talking about pluralities. Jared, I'm not trying to hijack this, but in any way, I really wonder what's going to happen if the Democratic convention is brokered.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
and
this
the
is
person
the thing that
who
I've been,
emerges.
This is, these is are the words that I've not even wanted to say aloud. Like, I'm so anxious about
wait,
this
two
idea.
People
it's Iowa 2.0.
So, wait, real quick. For someone that is listening and they don't know what that really means, like, what is brokered mean? Can we break down that terminology?
Yeah, so the brokered convention is this idea of getting to the convention and not having a clear nominee. So, all of these nominating contests that are happening throughout the primary are awarding delegates to candidates. Oh, Asha, I just realized you and I were at the Democratic convention together.
2016.
Sorry, coming back to the conversation.
Hashtag throwback Thursday. Yes. Except it's not Thursday.
So we are awarding delegates from each state to these different candidates. So tonight, both Pete and Bernie are going to take home 9 delegates. Let's see, Amy Klobuchar will take home 6. There's a total of 1,911 or something like that that is necessary to get your party's nomination.
Right.
But if no one has that, 1,991. If no one has that many delegates, then we have an issue, right? And so last time, Hillary Clinton, you know, just made it by, but she got it. It was, you know, Barack Obama in the past. But if we get to the convention and there is not a clear winner, then it is a brokered convention where it kind of becomes like the Iowa caucus.
Or the apocalypse.
God. Or the apocalypse.
Okay.
And I mean, there's nothing that Donald Trump would love more, right?
Oh, my God, that
chaos.
It fuels his narrative.
Absolutely. And I mean, like,
it's a season finale of a reality show.
It feels like we're in the series finale of America.
Yeah.
But we would then see those Bernie bros that we talked about. And Asha, you were there last year where I was saying to someone else, like, the energy at that arena was, what are these Bernie supporters about to do?
People were nervous.
What are they
going
to do?
Like, blow up the place?
Well, no. Like, are they going to...
Are they going to throw things
are
at
they going
the
to,
candidate
okay,
if
okay,
it's not Bernie?
Okay.
Right. And, like,
walk
are they...
out, storm out,
are they
going to
make a scene, essentially?
Yeah.
It was a concern to me. And, like, it ended up being fine. And Bernie was the person that nominated...
Hillary.
That ended up not putting Hillary into nomination. Thank you. But I'm just not sure what that looks like. And if it's, like, down to Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg, right? What does that end up looking like? Other thing I really want to talk about here is, what is the path forward for an Elizabeth Warren? Because I don't see her.
I'm sad.
You know, she's not winning tonight. She
don't
didn't win in Iowa.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'd rather us keep hope on Elizabeth Warren because I feel like.
Don't count around.
There are more. And I really do feel like there is a sense of like a lack of communication when it travels. I don't really think like, you know, Deborah mentioned this earlier. It is a little bit earlier. But I also think in a lot of spaces, these type of conversations and these type of news outlets are, you know, education of a lot of things are not fortunate to a lot of people to understand this and understand what's going on. And so if they don't understand that there's a candidate that is like actually preaching policies that they actually would, you know, need a formal understanding of, because a lot of times I'm understanding a lot of like, oh, what do these policies mean? What does this mean?
Yeah.
And so I do think there's a education there that it just, you have to be one interested in finding out.
she's right. not getting the coverage.
She's yeah, not, right.
And so, that is really hurting her. And yes, I will also yes. say she was very, it is so unfair and it is so sexist, but she's the one who took a hit last month when yeah. that situation happened with Bernie. She took a hit.
Yeah. I don't know. I
think that a lot of, that was with a lot of the Bernie bros coming out and calling her a snake and this and that and the other. And it's
they
like,
destroy that, people. That old it's school what they misogyny. Do.
So,
but I don't think she's out of the race yet.
Okay. Either. So, Deborah, I know we've got to let you go here in a moment, but I want to give you the kind of last bit of perspective on what is the path forward if there is anything that that Elizabeth Warren can do to turn something around.
Bill Clinton did not win a primary in 1992 until the sixth primary, which was Georgia. This race is so far from over.
And he only won one on Super Tuesday. He only won one primary on Super Tuesday.
So far, 350,000 mostly white people have voted right. out of 234 million voting eligible Americans.
Thank you.
It would be different if the first states were like New York, Texas, and California.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But
that's why I think it should change.
Yes.
I think that's a really valid point. Well, Deborah, thank you so much.
She's got a very diverse coalition as well.
What's that?
She's got a very diverse coalition of people working for her.
It's the best, in my opinion.
And currently, undecided is winning in polls. So, I mean,
yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of room
Deborah,
to grow.
Deborah Cleaver, the founder of Vote.org, we thank you so much for being a part of what we're doing here. We'll talk to you next time, okay?
Bye, Deborah.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Thanks so much, Jarrett.
Of course. Okay, so I want to know from you all, do you think that Bloomberg is going to be the sleeper? Because we're not going to see him until Super Tuesday showing up on any of these. And like there were people writing him in today. Do you think that Bloomberg comes up as a sleeper? Because that's what we were just talking about a little bit ago.
Yes. Oh my! It's kind of scary to admit that, but the way that his unlimited pockets are going, I really feel like who's ever doing the targeting is hitting it, and they are doing their job very well, and they're most definitely making their money's worth.
I bring this back up
because he's a definite possibility.
One of the things I forgot to mention earlier was like Bloomberg is now polling at number 4 in national polls.
I'm going to throw up.
You know what I mean?
As long as he's above Tulsi Gabbard, you know.
It's a scary thing.
It is scary, I think, because there are a lot of people in this country who may not know his track record, but they see him like as a moderate alternative to the more progressive candidates and they're like, okay, he's someone I could stomach. I'm going to vote for him without knowing policies like stop and frisk and his history with republicanism. And I think that could be dangerous to the Democratic Party because, you know, they're so hell-bent on going after these Republican voters, Trump voters. It's like, no, we need to turn out unregistered voters and turn out the Democratic base, which are women of color.
You know what I've always like wondered about, and this is just me thinking in my like in my bed just sitting there.
A window, you know, if you will.
So Michael Bloomberg, as we acknowledge that he ran as Republican, he was very Republican mindset.
Yeah.
Even if he like, let's say he is a sleeper, he ends up winning this whole entire thing. What would ever change his mind to like kind of go back into his Republican ways? Like, is that a possibility? It. Is that a thing? Is that something that he can actually do?
Well, then
you've
got to have a Democratic House and Senate to keep a check on
but
him.
But if that doesn't happen,
right?
Then
exactly.
it's one of those things where it's like, oh, whoa, this could.
Who does he surround himself with? Who does he?
Yeah,
that's why I'm so concerned about Michael Bloomberg. The idea that when I said earlier, like he could have credibly run as a Republican, And the way that doesn't make clear for me like what your positions are on things, it makes me just as nervous about him as Donald Trump, right? He wouldn't be as ratchet on Twitter, maybe.
Yeah.
But like, but you know, like
he could still be attacking women's reproductive rights. You never know what could happen.
He could still be going after you know, Muslims. He could still be
my gay ass.
Exactly.
like, yeah.
And so it makes me concerned because I'm not really clear what to do with a Mike Bloomberg as a potential candidate. And so that is what my concern is. I want to join, I think we have him on the phone right now, CNN political analyst and a longtime friend of mine. And I must say, like, gay black icon, Keith Boykin is joining us on the phone right now.
Are you kidding me? It's the Keith Boykin?
It is the Keith Boykin.
No,
Keith, are you there? I believe
in
Keith is on the phone. Wait, let's see.
Did it do it?
Let's see. Keith, are you there? Oh, he's not. He's getting up.
Wait,
Justin's running around in the back. Okay, but we are getting Keith on the phone right now. But I'm excited to chat with him. We're running the board over here. It's a whole lot going on behind the scenes. But about Bloomberg, I guess my biggest concern is that I hear Keith Boykin in my ear right now. Keith Boykin, how are you?
Hey, how are you, Jared?
Very well. I was saying that you are. Keith has been a friend of mine for years now.
We actually met at
the Democratic Convention.
Connections.
I like to make him cringe a little bit, and I whenever he answers the phone, I always say, it's television's Keith Boykin.
So that's Keith, how I look at him on Twitter.
Keith, we're talking about Michael Bloomberg right now and wondering if he's going to be the sleeper. I want to know what you think about Michael Bloomberg's candidacy as we look forward to these upcoming states and Super Tuesday.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a Michael Bloomberg fan, first of all. I'm a New Yorker, so I lived through all three of his terms, including his illegal, in my opinion, third term. But I feel like he's doing a good job of avoiding criticism. You know, he avoided all the debates. He's avoiding Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. He'll be on the debate stage, I think, in the next coming debate. But that's the first time because the DNC changed its rules to accommodate him. And that's the first time we're going to see him on stage where he's going to take a hit from his opponent. So it's kind of too early to tell. He's spending a lot of money in some states where he's being unchallenged. He's getting his message across. You see, he's increased in black support. He's now second to Joe Biden in black support in the latest Quinnipiac poll. He has 22% black support compared to 27% from Joe Biden.
So that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about. And I only have a minute here before we have to take a quick break. But I'm curious how this audio that came out today of Mike Bloomberg, how do you think that's going to sway black voters, or do you think it's going to have an impact?
I don't know if enough people know about it, because if you ask black people in New York, we know all about Mike Bloomberg's history. And I'm one of the people who was yelling from the rooftops months and months ago, Mike Bloomberg should not be the nominee. He's a horrible candidate. He ran racist policing policies in New York City, and he expanded gentrification in the city. And those statements I saw in those audio tapes and videotapes are completely consistent with his cavalier attitude toward African Americans and black and brown people in particular in New York City. So it's no surprise to me. But I think there are so many Democrats, including African American Democrats, who are desperate to beat Trump. They're willing to hitch their saddle to anybody in order to win in this election. November, so who knows?
I've been saying I would vote for a can of dog food over Donald Trump. We gotta take a quick break. When we come back, more of this conversation. We're gonna wrap up talking about New Hampshire and looking ahead to what is to come in the upcoming debate and the next states. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Election Night in Late Night with Jarrett Hill.
Election Night in Late Night with Jarrett Hill.
Welcome back to Election Night and Late Night. I'm Jarrett Hill, and I am joined by a panel of experts, of fantastic folks that I'm always grateful to have joining me. Ryan Mitchell from Let's Go There with Sheeran Ryan, weekdays here on the new Channel Q.
Hi.
We have Asha Daya, writer of Today's Wonder Women and the founder of Girl Talk HQ.
Hello.
We have Rance Collins joining us. He is the founder of Bros for America. And joining us on the phone is the icon. I just know he's cringing right now every time I say it. CNN political analyst Keith Boykin. Hey, Keith.
Hey, how are you?
All right. So I wanted to talk about the fallout of New Hampshire, right? We have seen some folks fall out today. Andrew Yang was one of those people that we lost in the race today.
Michael
and also
Bennett.
Michael Bennett, who no one's ever had a conversation about.
I don't even know who that man is. I'm sorry to that.
Devin Patrick.
Deval. I don't think he's gotten out of the race.
He's still in the race.
Oh, he's still in the race.
He's going to make an announcement tomorrow, I think.
Well, ain't that a blessing.
So, okay, with these candidates starting to fall away, there was a conversation here about one of the candidates. Her name is Tulsi Gabbard, Russian agent, period. And I'm sorry, but like, I keep looking at Tulsi Gabbard and wondering, like, what exactly is happening here? That really tickled your rant. But I look at Tulsi Gabbard and I keep saying Tulsi Gabbard is going to get out of the race and run as an independent. I believe
just
that
despite the
because Tulsi Gabbard, Russian agent, is going to try and disrupt the race as much as she can. Keith, I want to give you first perspective on this. What is your perspective on Tulsi Gabbard?
You could be right. I mean, I don't trust her. I don't know what she's likely to do. She has never had a chance of winning the nomination for the Democratic Party. I'm not clear why on earth she was running in the first place. She seems like she was defending Putin and Bashar Assad in Syria and attacking Hillary Clinton most of her campaign. So that doesn't seem like a recipe for trying to win the Democratic nomination. And so if she does run, even as an independent third-party candidate in the general, who's going to vote for her?
That's what I'm wondering. Like,
play a spoiler role,
who
like
is the Tulsi Gabbard voter?
She has like a very strong contingent, like small, but there are some rabid Tulsi fans.
Well, there are 8,923 people who voted for her, according to the results coming out of New Hampshire.
Those are the same people that are BTS fans. I believe they're all bots.
You know what?
It's very real.
What is the political philosophy of a Tulsi Gabbard fan?
Nothing.
What did he believe in?
Here's what I think. Exactly. She's got a lot of people who are either unregistered voters or people who choose not to vote, but that only vote for her. And if she's not the nominee, they're just going to sit it out as usual. They're like Joe Rogan listeners. They're Fox News watchers, because those are the mediums and the platforms that she's going on, because she knows that these people that she wants to cause division. She hates Hillary Clinton. She's in it just to cause disruption. She's not a serious candidate, but she knows she's got an audience.
And she can pull the votes.
What does the loss of Andrew Yang mean to the race today?
That we can't say Yang Gang anymore?
I mean, he brought in almost 3%. Go ahead.
I think it's actually more serious than that, because Andrew Yang is the last person of color.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And there won't be any people of color on the debate stage in the next debate. And this is a race that started out with an incredible amount of diversity, with people like Kamala Harris and Julian Castro and Cory Booker and Andrew Yang and Tulsi Gabbard, for that matter. And now none of them will be on the stage at the next debate. Yeah. So I think it's a sad testament to just how the Democratic Party has worked to create a system that simply amplifies the voices of the sort of the usual suspects.
What's interesting about that is Andrew Yang won't be on the next debate stage, but seemingly Michael Bloomberg will be. By the way things have changed, it seems like he might be able to make the next debate stage. I don't know. It kind of makes me cringe. Also, we have Deval Patrick, who we are expecting to seemingly maybe be getting out of the race tomorrow. Keith, your perspective, why has Deval Patrick not caught on?
That's a tough question. I hate to answer this question. I've avoided answering any questions about him because I've known him for 25 years and respected him a great deal. Yeah. And I worked with him in the White House years ago. But I don't think he ever had a chance. I think he knew that he never had a chance. I think he was encouraged to run by people because he was supposed to provide some sort of outlet for others who were disappointed by the leftward movement of the party. I've heard some rumors that he was put up to it by Bloomberg and he might get the VP spot if Bloomberg wins the nomination. So I don't know exactly why he was in the race in the first place. I haven't spoken to him at all this year, so I have no idea. I don't know why he chose to run. And I had said years ago, actually, I don't know if I ever told you this, Jared, but I've told a lot of people this years ago. Deval Patrick is the only person who I ever worked on a campaign for president for. I didn't work for Obama, and I actually went to law school with Obama, but I didn't work for Obama's campaign. I didn't work for Hillary's campaign, but I had always said I would work for Deval Patrick's campaign because I respect him so much. But he's changed so much since that time, and I don't think he would ever have a chance of winning the Democratic nomination in today's world.
Interesting.
Wow.
Keith, before we let you go, as you look ahead to Nevada. You look ahead to there in South Carolina, do you think South Carolina is make or break for Joe Biden, or can he still survive in Super Tuesday?
If he loses South Carolina, his campaign is over. There's no, and if he makes it to South Carolina, it's another question. I mean, he's got to do well in Nevada too. He can't finish in fifth place in Nevada. I think he's got to finish in top two in Nevada. And if he wins in South Carolina and he wins comfortably, then it's a whole new race. And Super Tuesday is going to be determinative at that point. But if he loses in South Carolina, then it's a wash. It's over for him. And the question then is, what happens to the black vote? Do they go to Mike Bloomberg? Do they go to one of the other candidates? I mean, Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar are doing horribly with black voters. So I don't know where they go at that point.
Elizabeth Warren.
I said that was your last question. What do you think about Elizabeth Warren there?
Well, I think that last poll I saw, she and Bernie are doing relatively well among black voters. They're not doing well, to be honest, but better. They're not at 0%.
Right. Bernie Sanders in the Quinnipiac poll is at 19% with black voters. Elizabeth Warren is at 8%. Of them are up from their last position.
They are. And it's all because Biden is collapsing. Yeah. Biden's black support is collapsing, so that firewall in South Carolina is going to be critically important for him. If it doesn't hold up, if black voters abandon him, then black voters are up for anybody. This is one of the reasons why I was saying all along that Kamala Harris should have stayed in the race.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
I always knew that Biden was a weak candidate. I've been saying that for a year now. People were criticizing me for saying that. Why are you so critical of Joe Biden? Because I saw him. I worked against him in 1988 when he lost. I saw he lost in 2008. If he couldn't beat Mike Dukakis in 88 and he couldn't beat Hillary Clinton in 2008, how the hell is he going to beat Donald Trump in 2020? That's the philosophy I've always approached it with.
Keith Boykin, the icon. Tell people where they can find out more about you and all the stuff that you're working on.
You can find me on Twitter at Keith Boykin or on my website at keithboykin.com.
Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you. I know it's late there in New York.
Thank you all.
Of course.
I know, right?
All right. Before we go, I want to look ahead from you guys' perspective as we look ahead to Nevada and to South Carolina and then Super Tuesday. What do you guys think these are omens of as we're looking at these results from now two states that have gone and we've seen Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders number one? Asha, I'll let you go first.
I just want people to, I'm an optimist, like Deborah was saying before. Like, I don't want people to kind of write anyone off just yet if their candidate didn't win. I don't want it to be a self-fulfilling prophecy like, oh, everyone says so-and-so is going to win, so I guess we're just going to vote for so-and-so. Right. It's like there are all these states that are much more diverse and that, you know, there are candidates who are still building coalitions and people like Elizabeth Warren. Look, she is my preferred candidate. I will put that out there. But I think that, you know, it's far too early in the race. Iowa, New Hampshire are some of the whitest states in this country. The electorate is completely changing. This election, the next election, it's not going to be where we're not going to see white people as a majority. We're going to see more Latinos. We're going to see more young people, millennials especially. We're going to see more people of color, black and brown people. So I don't think we should be putting so much of our faith and our like political energy into just two states. Right. Like, don't write off other candidates just yet.
Last minute here. Ryan, what do you think?
Well, I'm a pessimist for sure. And I think I'm a pessimist because history has taught me to be. America and every in our decisions, I mean, if we look at the past, look at where we're at currently. And so for me, I just want people to understand and take very seriously. If Joe Biden doesn't win South Carolina and that black vote is just going just like, you know, Keith Boykin just said, what are we going to really do? Because no candidate can win if they do not have that strong black or brown vote. Yep. And I think if we don't take that seriously and we don't get involved in our election before any of the major moments, then we're going to be screwed.
Rance, last word.
I just want to say, if you're looking for comparisons in previous primaries, don't look at 2008. Don't look at 2016. Go back and look at 1992, because that has a lot more in common with what's going on right now than any other primary.
All right. I guess my last word here is I think we've still got more surprises left in us.
I
think
love that
there's still more to see, more to figure out about this election. I want to thank all of my guests for joining me.
Rance
Collins, Asha Daya, Ryan Mitchell,
Hi.
Deborah Cleaver, Keith Boykin, and our producer here in the studio, Ginger Justin. You might remember him from Drop the Subject, getting fired in a game. It was a whole thing. Anyway, we thank you so much for joining us. We will be back here on another night live talking about this election and what's going down. I appreciate you tuning in. Have a great one.
Election night in late night with Jarrett Hill.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of...
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.